Hello and welcome to the IAAF Inside Athletics Podcast. I'm Ben Harlow, and on today's episode, I'm joined by the wonderful Cathal Dennehy.
Hello, Ben.
Yeah, Irish journalist and viral sensation, Cathal. You're kind of famed for a particular commentary experience.
I was. In 2016, I commentated on an Irish University Athletics Championships where Phil Healy, the Irish international sprinter, made a miraculous comeback on the final leg.
It was incredible.
It was pretty epic. I'd look it up on YouTube and put the sound on mute because me and my colleague Ronan Duggan screamed our heads off, and which kind of, especially among the American audience, tended to go down quite well and ended up on quite a few American networks like ESPN and NBC in the end, and those poor fans.
definitely put the sound up. That is the reason it went viral. From the depths of hell, I believe, was the key quote.
Here comes UCC. I think we're going to get third call.
UCC from the depths of hell are pouring through.
Oh, Michelle finished dying.
Here comes UCC on the outside as well. There it is. The leading of UCC. Pouring down the outside.
It's unbelievable.
Michelle Finn. She's out on her feet.
It was an amazing rise to fame for you, anyway.
It's gone straight to my head.
I can definitely confirm that. We've got a really jam-packed episode for you guys today. We have Greek pole vaulter Emmanuel Corrales as this month's guest. As well as that, we're going to be recapping the IAAF World Relays, as well as talking about the start of the Diamond League and also the GOTS's Hypo meeting. So fresh in everybody's mind, the GOTS's Hypo meeting. It was a pretty good event, I'd say. Damien Warner and Katarina Johnson-Thompson both kind of ran away with it, really.
Yeah. What I wanted was a live stream of Naffy Thiem sitting at home watching it and what she thought of that. Because Katarina Johnson-Thompson, I mean, you would have said in Rio that Naffy Thiem is going to win the next several multi-event global championships. But I think now we can fully say with Katarina Johnson-Thompson that she has a legitimate challenger who, if she can repeat that performance, and you'd have to imagine that her coach in France has allowed a little bit to work on over the next 4 or 5 months, and she'll be an even better athlete in Doha. If Naffy gets there healthy and Katarina brings the same form, it's going to be a hell of a clash.
I think that's the thing to take away from it as well, is all of her performances, whilst they were really good, they were just kind of solid. She wasn't really hitting her PBs. They were just really solid performances across the board from her. So it will be interesting to see how she does push it. And with Naffy as well, she's kind of been not out on her own. She's had a bit of challenge from some of the other girls, but she hasn't really had a proper main head-to-head kind of competition. And it'll be really interesting to see how they both go in Doha. And will Naffy get close to 7,000 points? Will Katarina? Because they're both capable of doing that. If they hit their PBs, they can actually do that. So it's going to be a really impressive World Championships from them both. And then I think Katarina won by over 330 something points, which is one of the biggest margins of victory in GOTS's history.
I believe she could have done the 800 metres backwards doing somersaults for the second lap and still come home with the title. It was interesting to see her say in interviews with the British media there that she felt imposter syndrome in recent, and she readily admitted that I do have imposter syndrome, where you have this feeling that you don't belong and you're not as good as you actually are. And I think a lot of media and fans would have picked up on that in recent years from Kat, that, you know, she was so modest and self-deprecating. Mm-hmm. And perhaps that played into some of her poor championship showings at certain points over the years where she didn't have that belief in herself. But I think the very fact she admitted that and is working on that confidence and the mentality, we saw it in Glasgow. She absolutely rocked the European Indoor mm-hmm. Championships, and she has now rocked GOTS's. So she couldn't be set up better on the road to Doha. And I think we're going to see a very new Katarina Johnson-Thompson at major championships in the years to come.
Obviously, it is quite a way away still from the World Championships. If you were Kat right now, what would you do?
I'd skip it. Go out on a high. I'd retire.
Go and get drunk.
But that's why I'm not a good athlete. I never was. Yeah, I think just be sensible. Look, she's got a great coach down there in the south of France. Yeah, who's coached the world record holder in the decathlon. And I mean, it's a great group. So he'll know exactly what needs to be done. Now, obviously, there's some scars there for Kevin Mayer even last year at major championships in Berlin with the long jump. And Kat has had her problems in that department in the future. So there's never any bulletproof guarantees of success, no matter how good form you're in going into a championship. But yeah, things look pretty rosy at the moment, so I guess just stay healthy, keep doing what you're doing, and she's going to be a serious threat to to Nefi in both Doha and Tokyo.
Yeah, and Damien equally, he was really impressive. And again, he won by quite a way as well. But what really impressed me was, you know, the young Australian, Ashley Maloney, who he won the under-20 decathlon in Tampere last year. And he had an incredible first day. I think he was sitting around second place. And then he slightly dipped off. I think he had kind of had a subpar pole vault and 1500 metres. But what a talent the Australians have got there.
Yeah, they continue to produce him. And yeah, he really, the first time I saw him was in Tampere, and he shone as a future star. But obviously, Kevin Mayer had set the bar at an unreasonably high level for all the decathletes coming up. But if there was one you'd have to pick who might be able to put it up to Mayer, who should be around for several more years, let's be honest, he's not that old in any way. It probably would be Ashley Maloney in the future. But yeah, Warner showing again there that he'll be a force to be reckoned with as well.
Aside from Gotsis, we've also had the IAAF World Relays as well. There's been some new events. First time out of Japan as well.
Out of the Bahamas.
Yeah, sorry, out of Japan. Losing my mind.
You're jet-lagged, Ben. Yeah,
I am jet-lagged.
I mean, I would make admission maybe that Ben, perhaps we recorded this podcast an hour ago and Ben forgot to press record. But that would be speculative on my part. So we'll carry on and blame jet lag for Ben's occasional error.
The jet lag from Great Britain to Stockholm is really, really tough.
It's deep, man. The struggle is real.
It was the first time out of the Bahamas, but you've been to the World Relays before. You went to the Bahamas. I never went. So what was your experience of that?
Wonderful. Great people, beautiful place, and an absolutely rollicking atmosphere for a World Relays. There are a few sites in athletics, and I think the first championship I ever went to was Paris in 2003, and I've gone to a fair share in the last 15-16 years, but there's few things that have compared with this sight of, say, Shauna Miller-Weibo getting the baton, running I think she ran, was it the women's 4x4, the mixed 4x4 back then, and just whatever it was, 14,000 Bahamians screaming their minds off for the 50 seconds of madness that followed. It was an epic experience. And even beyond athletics, I'd recommend people visit the Bahamas. It's a beautiful place. But certainly if the World Relays ever do end up back there, it's a must-see.
Yeah, and you, I've heard stories of you staying in a particular interesting Airbnb.
Yeah, unfortunately, when I looked up where many people were staying that weekend, the Paradise Island Resort, it's several hundred dollars or so. So that didn't quite stretch to my freelance budget the first time I went to the World Relays. So I stayed in this charming town, which I enjoyed anyway, called Fox Hill. But apparently it was near where the prison was. And one night when I was leaving the stadium, I had to basically bribe a taxi driver who was willing to take me there, because he said it's where all the bandits live. And he started saying prayers as I was getting back to the place at 1 a.m. and he said go straight inside and lock the door. And I didn't find it scary until people started telling me how dangerous it was, and but I was fine, so all's well that ends well.
It shaped you into the man you are today.
Exactly. Is that good or bad?
Who knows? But yeah, it was the first time outside of the Bahamas, so it was in Yokohama, Japan. Kind of, you coined it earlier, you said it was an aperitif for the 2020 Olympics to get a flavour of Japan. It was a really great kind of warm-up event, but there were some really good performances as well. Particularly what I found really fun was some of the new events. So the 2x2 by 400 metres, which was introduced, Donovan Brazier absolutely crushed it for the USA. But what did you make of that event?
I loved it. Mm-hmm. I think the 2x2x400, it's a great example of suffering. It's athletics version of the Colosseum. Seeing people being fed to the lions. Seeing some poor athlete have to do 2x400 off 50 seconds recovery. It's like that session some sadistic coach gives to their athletes just to be like, I'm going to punish you today and watch you squirm. But yeah, Donovan Brazier, I guess, is the star of that show, anchoring the US to victory. If you could pick an athlete in the mold of an athlete who would thrive, it would be a speed-based 800-meter runner, and Brazier is very much that.
Yeah, it was a really incredible race, and there were a few splats at the finish line, sadly.
Everyone loves a good splat.
The athletic splat, yeah, pretty brilliant. As well, something that I really loved as well, it obviously wasn't great for the home crowd, but the Japanese 4x1 men, their baton passing, I don't know if you haven't seen it, you must have been living under a rock, because it went crazy on social media, the Japanese 4x1 team trying to pass this baton to each other, and they just kind of... It kind of ricocheted off their elbows, bouncing it around their arms into the net, and they still managed to exchange it, but sadly they were disqualified.
Yeah, if you had to stake your life on one sprint relay team and getting batting around, now granted, Team GB, no offence Ben, would not be high on the list of priorities. Also, no offence to any American listeners, but neither would USA. But I would be staking my life on Japan in a typical sprint relay, because we've seen so often that their exchanges are so reliable, but... I guess they showed that everyone's human, and chaos and carnage that is the sprint relay can occasionally throw up a surprise, as we saw with our winners.
Yeah, do you think it had anything to do with it being a home champs for them? Was it extra pressure?
Could have been. Could have just been that some dude left his mark too soon.
or that. And then we saw Brazil win, and it was great to see the Brazilian team win. It got a huge reaction from Brazilian fans across the world, which was really nice to see. Really, Brazilian fans across the world, most likely Brazil, to be fair.
There's a lot of them in Ireland.
Is there? Okay, well, and the Brazilian island population as well.
They were sambaing down O'Connell Street in the centre of Dublin that night.
But yeah, it was a fantastic result, and it's just nice to see different nations win. And Statman John told me an interesting fact as well, that South America is the only continent left that doesn't have a sub-10 100-metre sprinter, but one of the Brazilian guys looks like he's set to do that this year, so that would be really exciting.
That would. Question for Statman John. How many Antarctica residents have broken 10 seconds for the 100 metres? If you could get back to me in due course on that and check the Tillis Doppager profile of any penguins, I'd be interested to hear if that stands up to your Statman theory.
Do you know what? Maybe polar bears. Wait, are polar bears in the
I think they're
North
in the
Pole?
Arctic. Oh, we're okay. Going to get shown up badly here if we continue this conversation. So just let's move on swiftly.
Moving swiftly on, there was a really tight performance in the women's 4x400m relay. The Polish edged out Italy and the USA, but there were six teams kind of coming into the home straight where it was pretty much anyone's game. So it was, again, it's nice to see... close battles in relays, because, you know, sometimes in the 4x4 you kind of get someone like the USA who are just kind of off in their own league, but it was nice to see them kind of battling out with the other countries as well.
Yeah, and Poland again, how many times over the years in 4x4s have we seen them upset the odds? I mean, a bad race for Poland is third or fourth in every major global championship, and in a way it doesn't make sense, because their sprinters aren't that prolific in, say, the 100 metre semi-finals or in the 400 metre semi-finals, but time and again we've seen it that when it comes to the relay they show up and they rock it, and world indoor titles, world outdoor medals, Olympic medals, time and again they do it, and once again the ever reliable Justina Sviti with that heroic anchor leg carrying them to gold.
She did really, really well. And there were some other great performances as well. There was the introduction of the mixed shuttle hurdles relay. The USA ran away with that. And there was a few other really fun events as well. So overall, I'd say it was a really great championship and good to get a little flavour for Japan ahead of Tokyo 2020. As well as that, the Diamond League season has kicked off as well. We had Doha and Shanghai now as well. Have you had a particular Diamond League highlight so far?
I would have to say the clash between Abdirahman Samba and Rai Benjamin over 400-meter hurdles in Shanghai.
Yeah.
I mean, ever since Rai Benjamin rocked out the NCAA championships last year on a wet track running 47.02 in Eugene, that was the clash I think everyone wanted to see. They wanted to see him line up in a Diamond League. He'd done it before over 200. They wanted to see him in his specialist event, the 400-meter hurdles. I interviewed him earlier this year and he said he was planning to run 12 strides between the hurdles, which is something I think he said no one has done since the 80s at the elite level. So I meant to actually go back and check whether he was running 12 strides in Shanghai, but he had plans to run well under the world record this year. Now I think he's been given a slight reality check going up against the undoubted world number one last year, Abdirahman Samba, but it was what athletics fans wanted and sprint fans wanted, and whether you're Qatari or American, I think you'd almost bench your allegiance for that race and just enjoy the spectacle it was, because you had probably number one and two in the world or one in three, I guess, adding Kirsten Warham in there, going to hurdle 10 side by side, neck and neck, and it was who had the most. And as we've seen so often last year, I mean, he was unbeaten. Abdirahman Samba had that final gear to hold his pace in the last 50. What a race. And I mean, I'm just thinking ahead here, but imagine Kirsten Warholm blasting the first 300, Roy Benjamin blasting it with him, and then Abdirahman Samba coming between them, between hurdles 9 and 10 at the World Championships in Doha, with the Qatari crowd going crazy for Samba.
Yeah, mouth-watering.
And the last 100, I mean, that for me is the event of athletics at the moment.
Yeah, it's really, really exciting times. And as well, there was a good women's 400 metre race in Shanghai with Sydney McLaughlin and Sawa-Eid Nasser, both really young talents, and it was cool to see Sydney go to just the 400 metre flat and race Sawa.
I know, I wish I could do one event well, and there's her just doing everything she wants well. It's not fair, Ben, is it?
Life isn't fair, Carl.
It's not. This is a cruel and lonely place. But yeah, Sydney McLaughlin, I mean, if what pressure she has had to deal with ever since, you know, she was 15, 16, and she was smashing high school records, winning world youth titles. But now she's turned pro, obviously, big money contract with New Balance, and she's all the pressure in the world stacked on her young shoulders. But certainly she's got herself into a very good setup there in UCLA, training alongside Roy Benjamin and Michael Norman, the other two stars who turned pro last year out of USC, and Joanna Hayes coaching her, who's, I mean, if you could pick a mentor, you've a female Olympic champion coaching you to guide you through that whole process of adolescence and the transition from collegiate to the professional ranks and all the social challenges that come with, you know, previously the spare hours were filled with classes and lectures and things like that. And now they're just filled with laying on the couch watching bad shows on Netflix or avoiding the many distractions that a professional athlete could have their career dragged down by. But she has the perfect mentor in Joanna Hayes, and certainly that clash against Nasser in what is not her specialist event showed that things are going great for her. So very much looking forward to seeing her try the 400 meter hurdles soon, and yeah, for Nasser again, picking up where she left off with a great year last year. But I don't think anyone's in any doubt that Shauna Miller-Weibo waiting in the wings is going to be the one lap wonder who still has to be dethroned this year.
Shauna is like kind of in a different league right now in the women's 400 metres, but I can't wait to see her clash with Sawa later in the season. As well as that, in Doha, the men's throws were really, really quite strong as well. We had Daniel Stahl had an incredible series in the men's discus. He was the first guy to throw over 69.5 in, is it five rounds, was it? Or something like
that. Yeah, it was five or six.
Yeah.
Which is just ridiculous. And no one else in the world has thrown over 68 this year.
Yeah.
That's when you know you're good, Ben. As we know, having thrown over 69 metres on many times in our lives.
There was also a great head-to-head in the men's shot put as well. We got Tom Walsh and Ryan Krauser, which has kind of been bubbling for a while. There seems to be a bit of tension, fun, good rivalry there. And Ryan Krauser kind of got one over on Tom Walsh, and Tom Walsh has kind of not had it his own way, but he had a really good year last year, and it's nice to see him being challenged.
Absolutely, yeah, that's a great head-to-head. I'm sure that'll continue all the way to Doha. And speaking of tension, men's 100 metres, Ben.
Oh, yeah. Some would say shade was thrown after the men's 100 metres in Shanghai. Noah Lyles, perhaps known for being a 200 metre runner, and then he beat Christian Coleman by a very small margin. But I think Coleman then took to Twitter and then was kind of, I don't know, it wasn't necessarily directed at Lyles, but he was just kind of saying, you know, people can run fast times for social media in May, but the world champs are in September, October, and he's right. There is the long game. It is the long game. Doha is the big prize this year. But what do you make of all that?
It was great fun. I think we need more of it. We need more hate in the world of athletics.
Hate.
Enough of this love fest. We need more
shade. At the men's pole vault.
Yeah. We need more UFC. I say that as an Irishman who's not a fan of Conor McGregor, but you know, every now and often we need a little bit of Conor McGregor in this sport with a little bit of social media attention. And Coleman, I don't really think Coleman was directing it specifically at Lyles. I think it was just a general statement.
Yeah.
He was probably getting some abuse and some idiots who tend to loiter occasionally on Twitter.
Yeah.
After being beaten, maybe they had him as their fantasy captain and they took to Twitter to vent their frustration, as I would when three of my athletes pulled out of Shanghai.
Oh, got it.
I won't name them.
Do you know
you know who you are, Luvo.
Luvo.
That could be anyone, Ben.
Luvo.
yeah, but I mean, I guess with Lyles and Coleman, what a rivalry. both men really want what the other guy has. Coleman doesn't finish his races as strongly as he starts them. From 60 onwards, the slow is noticeable as fast as he is running.
Yeah.
And Lyles doesn't start a race fast enough yet to win really a world title. You know, he has to become much better in the first 30 if he's ever to run the 9.7. That's probably going to be needed to win the world title or the Olympic title minimum over the next year. So yeah, it was kind of like, I guess it appeared as if Lyles was speeding up almost, which is an interesting, I'm sure sprint coaches would quickly debunk that theory because all runners apparently slow down from about 60, 70 metres, even in the 100 metres. But the illusion was that Lyles was only getting into his stride then. And I just can't wait to see him run at 200 metres because God help everyone if he hits top pace entering that home straight and keeps running like that down the home straight.
So, IWF World Relays, GOTSIS and Diamond League aside, there's been some brilliant things happening in the world of track and field. So, every month on the IWF podcast, we like to bring you the best and brightest performances and the weird and the wonderful of what's going on in the world of athletics. So, without further ado, here are this month's headlines. Shikari Richardson moves to fourth on the under-20 women's 100-metre all-time list after running 10.99 in the NCAA prelims. Li Zhaogong shines in Nanjing, throwing 1984 to win the women's shot put. Mondo Duplantis clears 6 metres to set a collegiate record in the men's pole vault. In celebration of Global Running Day, the IAAF's Run 24-1 returns on the 2nd of June. That's 24 cities, 24 hours, 24 one-mile races. Michael Norman runs 1984 in Osaka in his 200-metre season debut. In this year's Nurmi Games, if you break a javelin or discus record, you can win an island. Yep, an island. And finally, US 400-metre hurdler Infinite Tucker goes viral after a Superman-style dive across the finish line, which is now being replicated in track meets across the globe. That's it for this month's headlines, but remember, you can follow us on our social media platforms, IWF.org on Twitter, at IWF_athletics on Instagram, and the World Athletics Club on Facebook, or head to our website, IWF.org, to stay up to date on all things athletics. All across the world, just within the sport as well. What do you think of the new Superman craze that's been sweeping the world of athletics? You
know, I miss this?
Yeah, where they're throwing themselves over the finishing line.
Oh yeah, it's shocking. Shocking. It's foolish. There's going to be a lot of athletes with scrapes and pain and bruised shoulders for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of angry coaches be like, this is not getting you over the line faster. Yeah.
There was a video there last weekend of some collegiate race in America where I think it was the 300-metre hurdles, and 4 out of the 8 guys splashed over the line like they were in a diving competition or something. I think, though, a big factor was that the famous one we saw there recently in the NCAA went so viral and was so popular that guy got so much exposure for it that a lot of other, and like, I was over in America at the time and it was on the ESPN top 10 plays of the day and stuff.
Really?
Which is big. If a track and field event gets into the top 10 plays, you know, it's like the NBA finals, it's usually slam dunks and things like that are in that. You know, it's big, but I think because that guy in the NCAA got so much exposure that a lot of people are thinking, oh,
maybe he's onto something.
Maybe if it doesn't even help me, maybe I'll go viral too. Maybe if I do it for fifth place, it'll be even funnier. But I think it's extremely unnecessary. I mean, for Shauna Miller-Weibo in the Olympic final, and she's already starting to fade and lean forward and trying to hang on to the lead, it kind of makes sense that your one last effort is just lunge at the line because you're kind of falling anyway. And it's an Olympic final. You don't care if you break your neck if you get the gold. But yeah, otherwise, unnecessary. Please cut it out, lads.
So, as I mentioned earlier, this week's guest is Greek pole vaulting up-and-coming superstar Emmanuel Corrales. He's a former world indoor under-20 record holder. The record was later beaten by the one and only Mondo Duplantis, but he's a really, really exciting talent and an even better guy. So I hope you guys enjoy the interview. Right, we're going. We're recording.
Oh yeah, let's do this.
Okay, right. So Manolo, welcome to the IWF podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so let's talk about your all your merchandise stuff then. So this has all come about recently. You're a pretty young guy, and you already have your own merchandise and tagline, Fly Manolo, Fly. Yeah. Where did all this come from?
So long story short, when I was when I got injured on 2018 and I missed my outdoor season, I wanted to create something. And one day I was thinking, it just came on my mind, Fly Manolo Fly, and you know, I started do, you know, t-shirts and bracelets for my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a lot of people liked it in Greece, so I started my own, you know, brand, you can call it like that.
Uh-huh.
But it's for my friends, for now. I don't know what will happen later, but we will see.
So you don't sell them at all?
No, I just give it on my friends.
Just give them away.
I'm just giving them away, yeah. Oh, okay. For now, I don't know what will happen.
And does that come with your sleeves as well, the armbands that you do? Or is that different?
No, the armband is different. The armband is, you know, it's just something for me. But I don't know, I'm thinking of creating something like a line, I think.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I still don't know. I'm just focused on pole vaulting, and you know, it's when I pole vault good, we will see what we'll have next for the brand. You know,
it's cool to have other things going on as well. Because if you're thinking about pole vault all of the time, then it can maybe get a bit stressful. So just to have stuff like fashion or whatever.
Yeah. It really, help. You know, it really. If I have my mind only on pole vault, it will destroy me, actually. Because, you know, I'm a really nervous guy. I get nervous very easily. So when my mind is on something else, I get, you know, it's easier for me to do stuff.
Good. Okay, right. So let's take it right back to the start then. So growing up, you have an interesting family life. So your dad is Greek,
yes,
and your mum is Ugandan.
Yes.
So have you spent much time in Uganda?
I have been there only once, and when I was 12.
Mm-hmm.
I was not a pole vaulter then, so I had time.
And you weren't nervous.
And I weren't nervous, so... only one time. I really want to go there again.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, now I'm in Greece and on tour.
And how did your mum and dad meet?
So my grandfather was a priest.
Mm-hmm.
He was Muslim and then he became Christian.
Okay.
So when he became Christian, he came in Greece. And then he came with my mother and my aunt. So when my mom was 3, so my mom grew up in Greece and she met my father. They were both athletes
in track
and field. Yeah, my mom used to be a long jumper and my father used to be a decathlete. He used to have the national record. He was the national record holder, yeah,
for the decathlon. Yeah, I've heard about that as well.
Yeah.
So did your dad and mum, did they get you into athletics?
Me and my sister, I have a twin sister. I started on the age of 3. I did swimming, and after I did basketball and football, and when I was 10.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when I was 10, I get in the track and field, and here I am.
There you are.
Yeah.
That's exciting. So, obviously, pole vault isn't really a normal sport to choose, a normal event to choose. What made you go towards pole vault?
So, as I said, my dad, he used to be a decathlete.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted me to become a decathlete as well. So
you could be a decathlete. You've got a kind of decathlon build.
Yeah, he really wants me to compete one day, and I also wanna break the home record.
Well, you wanna beat his decathlon record.
Does it
still stand now?
No,
it's been beaten.
Yeah.
You wanna beat his personal
I wanna beat his personal best. Yeah. So my dad wanted me to become a decathlete, so he's starting me on the pole vault because, you know, pole vault is the most technical and the most, you know, I don't know, difficult sport, I can say.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most. So, yeah, he's starting me with the pole vault, but, you know, I stuck there. And here I am.
And here you are. So, well, how old were you when you first started pole vaulting?
I was 12.
12?
12, yeah.
That's
yeah.
quite young, isn't it?
Yeah,
but
it is.
Then, a few years later, you were competing in Cali.
In Cali, Colombia. Yeah.
And
Mondo and the other guys.
Yeah, 2015, right?
Yeah.
So, was that your first international competition?
Yes, it was my first. It was my first time getting on a plane.
Your first time getting on a plane?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And it was in Colombia. So, you know, it was something big for me to compete.
So it's your first time competing, getting on a plane, going to a new country.
Yes. Wow. So, you know, it was very emotional and very, you know, I was very excited and to compete and go. And
were you nervous
and
then?
I was a bit, but, you know, I was also excited. I was very excited to, you know, be on another country and meet new people, be on the national team. It was, you know, it was a big thing for me.
Yeah.
And it is, it still is.
No, it's huge, especially for a 15-year-old at the time.
Yes, yeah.
And so what was your experience like in Colombia? How did you find being in a completely different continent?
At first I was a bit nervous,
mm-hmm.
but then I got, like, nervous, mm-hmm. like, I was nervous. I don't know. I'm a nervous kid. I get nervous easily. But, you know, with the kids and the... I met new people. I met, you know, Mondo. I met...
Yeah.
I met... people that are still right now on the... They're on the big league. Mm-hmm. I know them. And it's really... you know, I really like being... you know, growing up together.
Yeah.
It is really important for me. So yeah, it was a really big thing for me.
And was that the first time you met Mondo?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was.
And you were both tiny back then as well.
Yes.
Looking back at photos.
Yes. We were tiny. And shy. We were shy.
Yeah.
Both. Yeah.
And you both got, so you got a bronze medal.
Yeah, and you got gold.
So were you happy with the bronze medal?
I could say so, yeah. I was. I didn't meet my PB.
Mm-hmm.
I think I did 5:20.
Yeah.
Then. But yeah, I got my first, you know, international medal. So, you know, it was huge for me.
Yeah.
And on the medal ceremony, there was Buka there.
Oh really?
Yeah, and he actually did the ceremony, and I was like, oh my God, this is Buka. And it, you know, he told me that you're gonna jump really high when you grow up, and I was like, nah, I don't know. I just do this for fun. I don't know, man. But yeah, that really motivated me, and yeah.
And then you did well the following year as well. You went to the World Under-20s this time.
Yeah.
So the so the next stage up, really.
Yeah, I got fourth.
Fourth,
yeah. Oh, I was so mad that day.
And you were against Mondo and Curtis, right?
Yes.
Who are both, you see them now in the Diamond Leagues with you.
Yeah. But we're friends.
Yeah.
We talk.
What was it like? How did you find Bydgoszcz?
It was... I really liked it. You know, I was more mature.
Mm-hmm.
I knew how to compete and how to... you know, be on in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, didn't get in the medals, but you know, fourth place. It is something.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's an achievement. I mean, you were still really young as well, 16.
Yeah, I was 16. Yeah,
because you were eligible for the Under-20s last year as well, but sadly you got injured.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
We'll talk about it.
Yes.
So, 2016, you gradually continued to improve throughout your career. It was all going pretty well, arguably. Yeah. And then you went to the World Championships in London, 2017. In London. Yeah. Talk to me about that.
Okay, so, two competitions before the London, I broke my pole for the first time. So, you know, it was something, I was in shock, I couldn't plan, I couldn't practice. So, going in London and actually doing vaulting, because I didn't vault in practice or in the competition.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I was, my mind was blocked. So, going there and, you know, competing and doing, getting, I don't know what place that yet. I didn't get in the finals, but I did something. I passed one bar. So that was a success for me.
I think you did. You did okay. I think you came from. I looked earlier, and I think you came around 17th.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, it is.
That was not bad for a 17-year-old.
Yeah, he was good.
Yeah, that's really good. So going into London, obviously, you did have this mental block.
Yeah.
When you came out into the stadium, what was going through your mind?
I was like, oh my God. So many people, I like having people, you know, cheering and full stadiums. That actually made me, it made me more alert and more excited. So I think that's why I actually, I passed one bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how did you find it? Because it was your first senior championships. Was that any different for you to under 20?
Mentally it wasn't. Mentally it wasn't, because you know, on my mind I was like, okay, I have one job, I have my pole, there's the bar, there's the match, so it's not it doesn't make any difference for me.
Yeah.
So yeah,
it went well.
I went well, I think.
Did you expect to make the World Championships in that year at all?
Actually, yes. Yes, I was. I was expecting. I got the qualification on the indoor. I jumped over 570 when I was 17. So
was that was that a world record under 20?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. It was next year, 578, but then it got beaten again, but, you know.
So, you were, so obviously, 2017 was a mixed year, because I think you did a no mark at the European under-20s.
Yeah.
Was that where you broke your pole? Or
yes.
Right, that all makes sense then.
Yes, it was. It was, you know, a hard year for me. Two hard years for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then going into 2018, so you had a good winter indoor season. I remember, because I think that was the first time I met you in Turin at the World Indoor Tour meeting, and you'd just broken the under 20 world record in the pole vault, so that was 5.78. How did you feel after you broke that world record?
Fun story. Mondo, he was. He used to have the world record, the 582, but it got cancelled.
Yeah.
So, we were texting at the time, and he was competing back then. And I was like, okay, give me 1 week. Give me 1 week. I just need that world record. Please don't compete that day. Don't compete. Don't do the world record. And, you know, we were just having fun. So I did it. I did the 578. I had, you know, the world record for a week. I felt really good. I felt it was a PB for me, so it was good.
And then Mondo, did he break it again at Clermont-Ferrand?
Yes.
Renault living in his meeting.
Yes. You know, I had the world record, so I can't complain for 1 week. So.
And it still happened. You got the plaque, didn't you?
Yeah, I got the plaque. So.
Yeah. So you there know. You go. It's there. It's in writing.
It's there. Yeah.
And then you went on to the world indoors.
Yes.
Which was really good for you. You did really well.
Yeah, yeah. I jumped 580. 580, and I got fourth.
It was, you were very close to a medal.
Yes.
Either way.
And
Did you? Was that your first major indoor competition?
Yes, it was.
And how did you find that?
My mind was definitely not on the medals. I was just going there, having fun, and, break my personal best. So I went there, I jumped 580, and I was like, oh my God, I'm on fourth place. I was looking at the screen and I saw my name and I was third at the moment. And I was like, oh my God. it was La Villanie, Lisek or Kendrick, and then it was me. And I was like, oh my God, I'm on third place right now. I think I can get a medal. But then the bar got on 590. My mind was I wasn't so concentrated because of when I did my personal best, I celebrated so.
You know, I remember watching.
Yeah,
you guys.
Yeah, and I got so tired after this. So now I'm a trainer. I know how to control my celebrations. I talked with my coach. I've talked with my.
Really, you have to control your celebrations.
Yeah, I have to control my celebrations. Yeah. Because I get tired.
Oh my God. So then it went up to 590 and that was just too much. Was it mentally when you look at the bar?
No, it was physically.
Physical?
It was physically, yeah. So I was tired.
For some pole vaulters, it can be a real mental game.
Yeah.
Because obviously when you look at a bar and it's so high in the air, sometimes it must be like, oh my God, how am I going to get over this?
Yes.
But then for you, do you not feel that at all?
No. I do not feel that. My mind is on my technique, and I always, you know, I'm positive.
Mm-hmm.
When I get on the runway, on my mind, I have the mentality that I know that I can jump this, and I can actually, you know, make the jump.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's my mentality.
So because of that, you mentioned how you need to save your energy when you do celebrations.
Yes.
Do you have to play it tactically in terms of what round, whether you skip a height or not?
This is a job for my coach right now, because you know, I'm not like Sam Kendrick, like he's like, he knows what to do on the competitions.
He knows when to skip and that.
Yeah, I'm still a rookie. I'm still like, you can say like I'm a rookie and on the big competitions.
Is this your first Diamond League?
It's my second, actually.
Where was your first one?
It was in Paris in 2017. Yeah.
But this is your first real year fully on the circuit.
Yes,
then.
yes.
So
I feel good. I feel excited. I feel ready,
I think it's good being a rookie, though, on the circuit, because it means there's no expectations of you.
Yeah.
You can just go in and have fun.
Yes,
and
true.
Not be nervous.
True, yeah. Don't so my goal right nervous. Now is to have fun and, you know, Just have fun and compete.
And what do you think of the state of men's pole vault at the moment? Because there is so many of you really young guys. There's like you, Curtis and Mondo, and you're all like 20, 21.
Yeah, there are a lot of guys. A lot of guys. You know, it's really good because, we motivate each other to compete better and be at their best performance like every week. So... yeah, it's pole vault right now is, I think, on its highest, I think.
There's a lot of people who are in the mix right now, and in the men's pole vault as well.
Yeah.
What I think is interesting is nobody has defended a world title in such a long time. There's always a new world champion.
Yes, yes. And that's what's excited about pole vault, you know. There's always an outsider. So, yeah, that's what makes the sport interesting.
Who's going to be world champion in Doha?
I don't know. I don't know. I can't say. I don't know. We will see.
If you were to predict, you have any idea? You?
I hope so. I wish.
Is that the goal this year? Do you want to be the world champion? Or is it a medal making the final?
Right now, my goal is to compete tomorrow. But my big goal for this year is the under 23 European Championships in Galve.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I want to get I want to be on the medals for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll see.
Is Mondo competing there?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think he's going on the Diamond League in Monaco.
Yeah,
but I don't know yet. We'll see. I hope he competes.
Yeah, it was a shame. So going back last year, so you had a brilliant World Indoor Championships, yes. Came fifth, and that was like the biggest performance of your life, right?
Yes, it was. It was.
And then shortly after, you got injured, didn't you?
I got injured. Yeah. I got my a bone bruise on my adductor. It was actually it was the injury was so big that mm-hmm. doctor said that that I will not be the same Manolo that I was before the injury, and it was really hard for me mentally
mm-hmm.
because doctor said that I will not be able to compete on a high level. So I don't know. It was really hard for me that day. It was hard. Yeah. I don't wanna think of it because you know I don't wanna cry. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, but yeah, it was really hard. It was really hard for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also changed coaches.
Mm-hmm.
I go with Andreas Chonis. He's also coach of Nicoleta Kyriakopoulou.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, now I'm good after I don't know, it's 12 months. After the injury, so yeah, I feel good. I feel that I'm back.
And how did you find having to sit back and watch the 2018 season instead of competing?
Yeah, it was like someone was shooting at me. But you know, I love pole vault.
Yeah.
I love competing. I love traveling. I love being in the competitions, in the, you know, be there.
Mm-hmm.
And sitting on my couch and watching all the competitions, it was not good for me.
Yeah.
but I saw really good competitions. I saw the Europeans.
Did you go to watch it in Berlin?
No, on no. TV.
On TV. TV.
Yeah.
That would have been too hard to watch it in person.
It would be too hard, yeah.
And
yeah.
What did you think of the competition?
I was shocked.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't expect two guys over 6 meters and Lisa got fourth place with 590.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. Now, I think that if you want to get on the medals in 2 years and 1 year, you have to jump over 6 meters to be on the podium
mm-hmm.
on the future.
Yeah.
This is what I think.
Do you think that's possible for you in this year, next year?
I hope so. I hope so. Mm-hmm. I don't put a limit on my mind. I don't want to.
That's good.
Have a specific number. I just wanna be stable on my competitions and on my jumps. I wanna be consistent, and if I'm consistent on the high level, it will come. I'm sure about that.
And with 2019, you started the year off well as
yes.
well. So indoors went really well for you. You came close to a medal again.
Yes.
At European indoors. How was that for you?
It was good because my body wasn't ready because I was injured. My body was on 40%. So going there and getting fourth place, it was a success. It was a success for me and my coach, because you know, we did a good job. We were thinking of not competing indoors and starting our season on the other season, but you know, we started indoors and we did what we did.
It's a strange year this year, because obviously the world champs are so late.
Yes.
How have you changed your kind of approach to how you're going to do the season?
Yes. I'm going to compete with 18 steps for a period, but and I don't know when, but I will go on to 20 steps when we get closer to Doha. So for now, this is what I know. We still don't know the competitions or the what, if we're gonna have like a mini summer break.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna. That's what I was thinking. Like,
yeah,
are you gonna have
like
to,
5 days or like four to 5 days?
Yeah, will you have another training, like a big training break? So yeah, you just do training for a while.
We still don't know. We're thinking about it. We're thinking about it, because if we have to be really, really careful about this season, really strategic. It's gonna be a long season, but you know, I'm excited about it. I'm really excited.
Good.
Yes.
So we've spoken about your goals for this year. The Olympics are also on the horizon. You didn't go to Rio. But Tokyo, is that the big goal for you?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It is one of my biggest goals, being able to be on the, you know, it's the Olympic Games. Everyone wants to be, to compete. And, you know, I want to be on my best. I want to be on my best, you know,
form.
Yeah, I want to be on my best form. So
yeah,
that's my big goal. Good. for the Olympics. Yeah.
Good. I'm sure you'll get there. I'm sure you will.
We'll see. Thanks.
So aside from pole vault and that kind of thing, you've been doing a lot of you've been doing some advocacy for race and that kind of thing. So you've been advocating for equality.
Yes.
So talk to me a little bit about that.
I was racistly attacked.
Yeah.
By a coach in Greece. I was harassed for 5 years now when I was 15. So something really bad happened. Like 3 days ago, he came on me and he started calling me, you know, the N-word and other stuff. I was so tired, and I spoke up, and my federation now is they're having a meeting, and you know, they're doing their job. And right now, my mind is on forgetting what happened and competing. This is my job. I don't want to get my mind to be, you know. Yeah,
that's good. But I think that's inspiring that you have done something like that, standing up, and you know, on social media you've been talking about equality and that kind of thing, and that could be really helpful to
it's really important for me, because you know, a lot of people could be on the same position as I was. So it's really important to talk, you know, to your coach, your family, your federation. You just have to talk to someone, because, you know, we're in 2019.
You know,
it's not like...
It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. So, you have to speak up. There's no space for racism. So, yeah, that's my message.
And that's a brilliant message to end this interview on. Thank you so much for chatting with me.
Thank you.
About everything, the highs and the lows of the pole.
Thank you. I hope my English was good.
Everybody, I think you should drop him a message after this and tell him how amazing his English was. This was his first proper English interview.
Yes,
so
yes.
You've done amazingly well. Congrats, mate. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Cheers.
Cool. Let's talk about the Stockholm Diamond League. Why we're here right now, we're looking ahead to, a really exciting meet, I think, in prospect.
There's a meet here. I just came for the scenery then. I don't know about you.
The Stockholm port that we're looking out to.
Beautiful
now.
Fresh air, and as the sign told us, the cleanest tap water in the world.
It did, yeah. Mm. It did, lovely. What are you most looking forward to in Stockholm?
The tap water, for one. But once I get the tap water drunk, I would have to say there's a lot of events. I think... Individually, I guess the individual brilliance of Michael Norman. I mean, he could conceivably threaten the world record tomorrow night, but who knows? I mean, so many Americans do it at a smaller meeting in America or in the NCAA system, struggle to reproduce it when they come to Europe, whether it's jet lag or whatever other reasons. But it'll be interesting to see. I mean, he started the season unlike anyone else has ever started a 400-meter season.
Mm-hmm.
He backed it up with a 19.8 200 meters.
In Osaka, so World Challenge, which was out of the USA.
Yeah.
Which is interesting as well. Norman is actually half Japanese. I think his mother is Japanese, so they were visiting family, and it just kind of coincided with the fact that he could then run in Osaka. So, yeah, it's interesting.
I wish I could run 19.8 for 100 metres, never mind while on a family visit to Japan. But yeah, I mean, the Diamond League record, I think it's 43.60-something by Wade Van Niekerk's a few years old now. That looks there for the taking if we get good weather tomorrow night, which it looks like it'll be okay. Not exactly ideal for sprinters, but beyond Michael Norman, he should have it all his own way in the men's 400 metres. Women's 200 metres is a epic three-way clash. You'd have to say Dean Asher-Smith as number one last year and European champion, sub 22 seconds, looks the favourite.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have the Olympic champion and world champion and Daphne Skippers and Elaine Thompson.
Yeah.
Probably both getting back to their best after probably subpar seasons last year. Elaine Thompson had a few injuries. Same with Skippers, she switched between coaches. I think she's now back with her old coach, Bart Benema, who took her to world gold in the 21-6 in Beijing 2015. So,
yeah, absolutely nuts.
Yeah, so she didn't start her season well in Ortigam, so I'd say it's a long process for her to get back into that. So I think we'll be looking at Dina probably rocketing around that bend again and coming into the home straight with a lead, and maybe Elaine trying to run her down. But I'd imagine Dina will be the number one there. But I mean, there's so many good events here.
Distance man.
I am, so I was waiting to get that out there. I said I'd better talk about a few sprints first as a distance nerd. But men's 1500 tomorrow night, the Maningoi dynasty meets the Ingebrigtsen dynasty. So I mean, if you look at it on paper, I mean, I guess being European as we are, like, I guess Europeans always try and cheer for other Europeans, especially in an event like distance running when you're going up against the might of East Africa. So the Ingebrigtsens have such a high profile within Europe and with the fans here. But if you're looking at it on paper, the Maningoys are winning this family feud. They should really be a lot better known than the Ingebrigtsens in world athletics. Elijah is world senior champion from London 2017. Undoubted world number one at the moment, maybe just ahead of his compatriot Timothy Cheruiyot. But younger brother George, so he's beaten Philip Ingebrigtsen and Henrik Ingebrigtsen to win that world title over 1500 metres. And then at junior level, or under 20 level as we call it now, George Maningoy is the world under 20 1500 metre champion, where of course he beat Jacob Ingebrigtsen last year. So there's no doubt who's winning at the moment. It's the Maningoys, but it'll be interesting to see if that success continues or whether, now that they've got them up in Northern Europe, whether the Ingebrigtsens can land a blow tomorrow night.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how that goes down. I mean, it's such a strong event anyway. You have Timothy Cheruiyot as well, and then you have the likes of, casting our minds back to indoors, we had the Ethiopians, was it Salomon Barega and
Tefera. He's in the field as well tomorrow.
Yeah,
and
they were
indoor record.
Setting world
and he doesn't
indoor
even
record.
Get a mention.
Yeah, I know, literally. It's such a stacked field. It's really, really, really exciting. In the field, though, there is the men's long jump. Last year, Juan Miguel Echevarria, he jumped 8.83 windy, and subsequently the pit has now had to be extended in Stockholm because he did literally jump out of the pit last year.
I hope someone has invoiced Juan Miguel for that construction work that was done. Look what you did to us, Juan, last year by nearly jumping out of the pit. We're after bringing in the diggers, and I tell you, there's about 5 sacks of sand have to be bought. It's not cheap in Sweden, I tell you.
Yeah, it really isn't. I can vouch for that.
Yeah, but Yeah, Juan Miguel. I mean, you've got Manyangi in there as well. He was sick. I think he picked up a slight injury as well in Shanghai. He had to pull out. So I wouldn't expect to see him at his best here. Echeverria has already jumped over 890 Windy in Cuba earlier this year. So often we've seen Cubans jump huge in like Havana and then been unable to reproduce it when they come to Europe. But he is one last year who proved that he can do it when he came to Stockholm.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it at World Indoors in Birmingham last year as well. So he's going to bring his best. He's a very cool dresser. I've seen him down at breakfast and lunch there the last day or so. And he brings a certain style to the long jump. And to daily life, and he's one of the most exciting talents in the sport, and you have gurus of the event like Mike Powell saying this kid is going to break the world record, so I think eventually that will happen. We've had 83 world records in this 107-year-old stadium now, Olympic Stadium incredible. In Stockholm.
Yeah, home favourite, Daniel Stahl. Thoughts on the men's discus? You've got Fredrik Dekker's kind of coming back as well.
Yeah, I mean, Stahl looks the overwhelming favourite. You'd have to imagine if he just reproduces one of those throws from Shanghai over 69 metres, it should be enough. I mean, but you never know. Fredrik Dekker's, I mean, I remember being here last year, and for anyone who has complaints about injury and is pulling out of races, just remember that Dekker's was here last year, and the day before the meet, I remember him getting into a lift, and he had his knee heavily strapped, and he was saying, I'm probably going to pull out. I can't like bend my knee. I can't squat at all without severe pain. Next day he shows up at the event and he's still with his knee heavily strapped. In warm-up he was thrown up towards 70 metres. Bang, first throw was over 69 metres. Jamaican record to take the diamond, take maximum points and the cash money. So it has good memories, this arena, for Fredrik Dekker's, but he'll need to be at his very best and probably be re-breaking the Jamaican record if he wants to put it up to Mr. Stahl.
Yeah, so we've got a really exciting meet in prospect generally, and I think that's pretty much everything for this this episode of the IAAF podcast. Carl, you got any closing remarks?
I have nothing to declare on in my own greatness.
And where can the lovely people find you on social media?
To be honest, I would recommend you not to find me. There's nothing of value I will add to your life. But if you're so inclined to torture yourself with tweets about Irish athletics and occasionally international athletics, I'm at Cahill_Dennehy.
As always, please do like, comment and subscribe. That's pretty much everything. But yeah, so thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it and we'll see you next time. Cahill, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Anytime.
Cheers, guys. Bye.